This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. In Somalia, the Islamist forces who have controlled the capital, Mogadishu, and a good part of the country since last summer, are in retreat. Late reports say Somali government troops have entered the city after the Islamists abandoned it. Should Somalia's weak, UN-backed transitional government prevail and resume control of the capital, it will owe much of its success to neighboring Ethiopia. That's because Ethiopia sent in air power and ground forces to battle the Islamists. NPR's Gwen Tompkins reports from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
For most people in Addis Ababa, the war in Somalia seems far removed from daily life. Ethiopia's military support of the transitional government in Somalia has landed this country in a holy war with Somalia's Islamists, the Islamic Courts Union. What's more, the Islamic courts have threatened to attack Addis Ababa itself. But people here seem more concerned with other matters. On this weekday, many of the children went to school. Many of their parents went to work. The vendors got to vending, the beggars got to begging, and even the birds revved up for their morning sing-along. But somewhere in the air was the faint sound of crowing. Amare Aragawi is the editor-in-chief and owner of The Reporter, one of the daily newspapers here. He's a true believer in Ethiopia's war with the Islamic Courts Union. He says the Islamic courts have been commandeered by foreign extremists who threaten the entire region.
There is an international extremist force who wants to settle in the Horn of Africa, in the East Africa, and if possible expand to Africa. That force has to be dismantled, weakened, you know.
Over the weekend, the Islamic courts announced plans for a guerrilla war against Ethiopia. But Aragawi is betting all the way on the superiority of Ethiopia's military, a force forged in part in a long-fought rebellion that overthrew former dictator Mengistu Haile Mariam.
We shouldn't forget the backbone of the Ethiopian military. This is a force that has toppled the previous government through guerrilla warfare. They have been themselves 17 years in the bush with guerrilla warfare. The very force itself that is in Somalia now.
That's the kind of talk that makes Somali national Mohiddin Odusuge think about buying a ticket home. Odusuge has a wife and 6 children in Mogadishu. He also lives in a neighborhood in Addis that the people here call Mogadishu. He couldn't be happier with the way the war is going.
Yes, 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 yes. We are very glad that. We are very glad, very glad. Because after this time, I can go to my country, to my home. If the government is there in Mogadishu, I will go to my home.
But there are some people in Addis who wanted to avoid war in Somalia altogether.
We're not convinced that the situation did warrant declaration of war.
That's Bayena Petros. He is one of the few vocal members of Ethiopia's political opposition. In parliament, his party opposed a bill to move Ethiopia closer to war with the Islamic courts. Petros says his country should be spending more of its energies on eradicating poverty at home, feeding the hungry, and in resolving its ongoing border dispute with Eritrea. But he says that many political activists here do not feel free to talk publicly. That's because many of Ethiopia's political dissenters have been jailed since elections last year.
People are scared. See, the thing is not that it is in the policy of the government or the constitution or the law of the land does not, in theory, provide protection. But one of our parliamentarians threatened on the street. You know, who voted with us.
And Isaac Eshet, a Muslim student at Addis Ababa University, says that many young people especially are against the war.
The Ethiopian Christians, the Ethiopian Muslims, especially the youngsters, are really against this war. Nobody wants a war.
Eshet has plenty of opinions he'd like to share about how Ethiopia has handled the Islamic Courts Union. So do his friends. But for now, they and many Ethiopians prefer to keep their opinions to themselves. Gwen Tompkins, NPR News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
We turn now to the Balkans, where elections in January will be an important month politically, as Serbians go to the polls on the 21st. That vote pits parties that are pro-Western against Serbian nationalist groups, a crucial fight over the country's political direction. The United Nations has postponed a decision on the status of the breakaway province of Kosovo to make that less of an election issue. At the same time, the United States has been reaching out to democratic forces in Serbia. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Vuk Jeremic, a youthful aide to Serbia's president, is enthusiastic about Serbia's budding military ties with the U.S. It started off with a joint program between Serbian forces and the Ohio National Guard.
They're kind of national heroes. They're like American cousins coming over and helping us out. That's general public perception. Whereas inside the armed forces, the enthusiasm is actually far greater.
In an interview in a hotel lobby in Washington, Jeremic is particularly animated when talking about the recent decision by NATO to let Serbia join the Partnership for Peace program. He and his boss, President Boris Tadic, made a big push here to make this happen, even though Serbia has yet to meet one key NATO requirement, to hand over an indicted war criminal, Ratko Mladic. Jeremic's lobbying effort went something like this.
We tried to explain to our allies, United States included, that membership in the Partnership for Peace before the key parliamentary elections that are taking place in Serbia on January 21st would amount to a very significant political boost for the forces in Serbia that are strongly pro-European and pro-Euro-Atlantic.
His boss even wrote a letter to President Bush, bringing up another twist, the Kosovo question. That's according to Daniel Freed, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Europe. He quoted the Tadic letter this way.
We really do want to join with the West, come what may in Kosovo. We're serious about this. And Partnership for Peace would be seen as a big step in this direction. This is a good time to do it. He made that pitch. He's a decent person. I've known him for over 20 years. He is a quite credible pro-democracy figure in Serbia, and this letter meant something to us.
One longtime Balkans watcher, Daniel Serwer of the U.S. Institute of Peace, says Washington is making a mistake, buying into this lobbying campaign rather than sticking to its principles that Serbia must hand over indicted war criminals before being embraced by the West.
Normal trade relations have been restored. Serbia has been allowed back into all international organizations. Basically, I think America has surrendered its last bit of leverage on this issue and has signaled that it was prepared to accept defeat.
But the State Department's Daniel Freed defends this unusual flexibility for the Bush administration. He says keeping Serbia at arm's length wasn't working. And with a decision on Kosovo coming down the line, he says it was important to show Serbia it will be welcomed in the West. It's been 7 years since NATO pushed Serb forces out of Kosovo to stop an ethnic cleansing campaign against the Albanian population.
We need to resolve Kosovo's status. We can't go back to Belgrade's rule. We can't stay where we are with this neither here nor there situation of basically UN protectorate. That won't work. We have to move ahead, but we have to move ahead in a way that doesn't also leave Serbia in a kind of sullen nationalist isolation.
The U.S. has clearly concluded that it will be easier to get the Kosovo question resolved if pro-Western parties win the elections in Serbia in January.
If they see a future for Kosovo in which the Serbian minority has some guarantees, has some protections, including by the international community, they may live with this. And that's certainly our hope.
The International Crisis Group warned in a report recently that there could be more violence in Kosovo if the international community keeps delaying its decision on the status of the province. Freed says he doesn't expect any more delays after the Serbian election. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.